Mini episode 676 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by TV Holly, your home on the web for coverage of today's television scene and a look at the history of the medium as covered by big time TV critic Adam Buckman. Follow them on the web at tvholly.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Royal Rumble Anthology in the FDH Lounge. We are on part 5B. This is 2004. In the history of the Royal Rumble, Rick Morris, Kyle Ross bringing it to you. Go back to 1988. I say this at the start of every one of these ones. 1A, if you want to hear our thoughts overall on the Royal Rumble, the structure of it, the history of it, what it was initially intended to do, what it came to do eventually. We cover all of that in the first one. We get it out the way. First one of every era, we look at a lot of the macro stuff, a lot of the things that come to define this era. We are in part five right now, the split happens era, 2003 to 2007. We got a lot of macro stuff out of the way for 03. I know my boy K-Dog doesn't have as much macro stuff. I don't either, because we did a very comprehensive job of setting the table for you. We're now into this era. Things are unfolding as a result of what we saw in 2000 year and the precipitous years of change before that. We talked about the hurricane of change from 01 to 03. To an extent, we saw it keep going on throughout 03, but now we're just sort of reacting year to year to what happens in between, and we're almost sort of, in one aspect, into the modern era of where there are no cataclysmic changes from year to year. There, we will have changes, we will have setups, but nothing on a par with what we just talked about. We don't have that, I don't think, any year subsequently. Am I wrong? You're making a face. Am I wrong about that?
I don't know, I just make a lot of faces.
Oh, okay.
So, 2004 Royal Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
When I think of this show, I think of a lot of things. I actually struggled how to frame this show because I've been framing each show, I feel like, in the context of a larger mosaic.
Okay.
Here. And this one I kind of struggled. I remembered that I had become kind of a casual WWE viewer throughout 2003.
That's how a lot of us were.
And I was not... I didn't order this show in 04. It was, remember, 03 was a weird period. Sometimes I always like to add these personal asides.
Mm-hmm.
So in 03, the very beginning, was actually the end of 02, I quit law school.
Okay.
And
I never even knew this. This just in. Okay.
Oh, you didn't know? Yeah,
no,
I did a real cup of coffee in Vermont in law school.
Oh, okay. Oh,
for about
Bernie
10
Sanders
weeks,
territory.
Yeah, for 10
okay.
weeks, yeah. Quit. All right. And I quit, and then I came home, and, you know, I'll be honest, I was just partying a lot.
The funny thing is, I took a pre-law class in J school at our beloved Ohio University. I took one class because I thought about it one time. I'm like, I do not even remotely have the patience for this. So it's like,
yeah, like, I remember.
I tapped out a lot earlier than you did.
It was exam time in 02. I was watching a lot of Sopranos and SmackDown 6 matches. I remember I was real it was funny. In 02, I remember in Vermont looking forward to SmackDown a lot, and I didn't watch Raw ever.
Okay.
Because, like, during the Katie Vick thing. But in 03, I was just sporadically watching. I remember some things from the second half of 03. I remember that Iron Man match that Lesnar and Angle had. Mm-hmm. But I didn't watch it live. I remember the old Bob Sacramento of the show, Chad Repack, he taped. Uh-huh. He's like, oh, you got to watch this. And I was like,
okay.
All right, I'll watch it. But we had stopped ordering the pay-per-views, me and my little group, mm-hmm. that I got together. We were ordering, like, all these things. Like, I remember we ordered our Armageddon 02, for Christ's sake.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So
see, my group and I had tapped out, certainly, by WrestleMania 2001.
Okay, even when I was in Vermont, I was ordering them by myself.
Uh-huh.
I was kind of bored. Truth, let's not get into that.
Okay.
But, you know, we ordered No Way Out 03, WrestleMania. After WrestleMania, we had kind of just stopped. I was like, you know, these just aren't great. And we never ordered one of these brand-only pay-per-views, which, I said at the end of the last mini-episode, 5A, when we covered the 2003 Rumble, they were all generally pretty weak, and I'll stand by that comment. They were all weak. Those shows needed to be really strong to justify the price tag for a split roster, and they weren't. So I did not order the 2004 Royal Rumble. It was funny, the 2000, 2001, 2002 Well, I watched 2001 live because they showed it at that church in the school at OU that I referenced earlier. But, you know, I was in college then, so I didn't watch them live. I remember not really caring about 2004 Royal Rumble going into it. And I read the results online after the fact, and I saw that Chris Benoit won. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. I'll give this a chance. And I'll be, truth be told, and we're going to have to tackle the Benoit issue here in this little mini episode. That got me back into it. I like Mania season in 2004. I like Mania season in 2005 as well. Don't really like the rest of the year. But this show did bring me back, quote unquote. It wasn't a very long hiatus. Not like I had turned against wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
But it got me definitely interested. And I think we can all agree 03 was not WWE's finest hour.
To be sure.
It was a poorly booked year.
Right.
But you had the weak brand only pay-per-views. I'll mention that for a 17th time. Thank you very much. And there was, by the end of the year, what I call a Lesnar and Triple H fatigue.
Right.
Again, an issue with the brand split throughout its history, at least during this era, the 03 to 07, is that both shows were booked similarly in terms of their champions. So we had Lesnar had flipped back heel in the middle of the year into his more comfortable role, and you had with he and Triple H essentially two dominant heel champions. Now, Triple H did wind up losing to Goldberg. I thought it was too late by the time he finally did the job, and Goldberg wound up kind of being a pretty paper champion for 3 months. But as we rolled in 04, you had two heel champions. And WWF, for better or worse, whether you like this or not, is a babyface promotion. When this company works, going all the way back to Bruno, Hogan, Austin, Rock, even John Cena, when WWE is at its best, a babyface is the center of the promotion. Here, you've split the rosters in two. You have two world champions, and they're both kind of dominantly booked heels, and I don't think that worked. And so as we roll into 04, they clearly needed to make change, and by God, King, they chose two good ones.
Yep, they did.
And for me, this is how I frame the show. It's a rectifying of how I felt then and now, because obviously with both Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit, the situations are different, but in the end, both are dead, and it's not fun. It's not warm and fuzzy. It's just horrible, really.
Right.
You don't want to rank deaths. I mean, the Benoit thing has a life of its own, obviously, and the whole situation that unfolded. Eddie was something that happens all too much in the industry.
Right.
But, you know, where this led, WrestleMania 20, the two most unlikely it's funny, again, though, they kind of booked the same in that, okay, you have these two dominant heel champions. Oh, okay, now we're going to elevate the two good underutilized workers at the same time.
Well, and here's the thing, too. I just want to sort of qualify what you're saying about dominant champions, because the interesting thing is, as I have noted to you, is that the Lesnar we saw then is different than the Lesnar who returned as a heel in 2012.
Yeah, he did job more than he should have.
He showed ass. He showed vulnerability.
You're right. I should have
argue, politically, one could argue he showed ass more often than Triple H, if you think about it, how Triple H allowed himself to be portrayed.
I guess you're right.
I mean, they were largely dominant. But I want to qualify that
because
I don't want anybody
right
to think of Lesnar today.
I just think that it's very clear going into 2004, they needed to shake things up on both brands.
They did.
That people were kind of sick of seeing Triple H and Brock Lesnar as the two champions.
And, you know, as far as who they chose for this, I teased this at the end of our 2003 recap, and this is, I see a very real sort of thing here, a parallel to where they were then, to where they happened to be coming up on WrestleMania 32 and we're taping this. But I see this as they came to grips and they were realistic about where they were at the time versus I don't know if that's the case today. And that is, they pointed the entire year to WrestleMania 20. I take that as, and I take them at their word, that that meant they were trying to point to the biggest show of all time. But here's the thing. Internally, they had identified John Cena as a guy they were going to push to the top.
But he was not ready at that point.
Yet. they didn't know what they were going to do with the other spot. I think, and I think you think, they probably had Randy Orton more earmarked for that. Certainly than Batista in 04.
They had Orton earmarked before Mania. There's right. Chris Benoit, when he won the title at WrestleMania, they knew he was losing the title to Randy Orton. That was the plan.
Usually it's transitional champions dumping before Mania. This year it was transitional champions winning at Mania. Although Eddie was supposed to have more legs, but he was having a harder time psychologically dealing with being on top. My point to this is they realized that they couldn't make this show the culmination of the next era. That was going to have to wait for a year. And it ended up being John Cena and Batista. They had the patience to wait for a year. We're coming up on a scenario now. They're going to be in Jerry World, 100,000. Once again, we want to make this the biggest Mania ever. And to an extent, by bringing us, presumably, Reigns and Brock 2, and Roman Reigns' real coronation as champion or whatever they're going to. But here's the thing. You know what they've been doing in recent years with the card, filling it out with the legends. We get three or four matches in here. Well, Sting's gone. There's probably nobody at this point for Triple H to have in there, et cetera. And so many of the regular hands are gone right now because of injury. Cesaro, Orton. Who else am I missing here? I mean, there's a lot of big ones on this. Seth Rollins, et cetera. So it's like, once again, they probably can't deliver what they wanted to deliver, the biggest thing of all time. Now, I don't think they suffered for it in terms of buy rate or...
No, WrestleMania 20 did very well.
Like
It was also a stacked show. They were able to stack the show. You watch that card.
Yeah.
Okay, there's some things that you're like, well, was this necessary having two four corners matches for tag titles? But that's...
You talk about duplicative. There you go.
Yeah, it's the same scenario. There was duplicative you had a lot of big names. And it's funny. It's really different between 04 and 05, I think, the way we're going to frame things.
But 04, don't you think Vince would have wanted, in his heart of hearts, if he could have had 05 in 04, don't you think that's what he would have wanted? By God, because think about 10 years earlier. Talk about this.
No, WrestleMania. Look, well, one day we're going to get around to ranking the WrestleManias. We're going to do a podcast. That might be the next anthology thing we do. WrestleMania 10, WrestleMania 20, WrestleMania 30 are very comparable WrestleManias, and it all boils down to just preference. They all can be framed the exact same way,
right?
In that, in the end, there were guys who aren't typical Vince guys going over, and you're like, holy shit, I can't believe this guy is a champion at Mania, and I'm really happy about it.
Right. But what was weird about 20, and the guys that we're going to see crowned coming out of this show, is they're guys that, I mean, like, in our heart of hearts, right? I mean, it was the ultimate smartgasm. I watched WrestleMania 20 at Harpo's, and the whole, we're all pounding on the
we
table.
Did
tap,
or, it's
tap,
funny.
Tap,
we
tap,
did
tap,
order
tap.
That one. We yeah. did order that yeah. one. I was pretty fired
but
up
I mean,
for that
it's
one.
Like, we all knew in our heart of hearts, this is not who Vince wants at the top long term. Benoit Guerrero.
Until he actually won, I kind of was like, God, they're going to do something stupid.
I thought so too.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what the meta stuff is what made the ending better, because you figured Triple H was going to get out of jobbing and he jobbed clean.
Mm-hmm.
That was just my point about this, is that it's a weird thing. It's weird seeing these guys get pushed this year, knowing that they weren't in the long term plans as top guys going forward.
Well, hold on now. So let's.
Eddie might have been, but
well,
not,
and Benoit was 2.2. So let's go back.
Let's
here.
Go back. Yeah.
Benoit gets the standing O at 03. We just talked about that. The original plan was, and I don't know how it worked. I was reading Alvarez's old newsletters.
Okay.
At some point in 03, post-Mania, the plan was for Benoit to beat Lesnar.
Okay.
And hand him his second loss. I think he was going to tap. But Angle coming back, I think maybe he came back early from that injury.
Came back way early.
Okay.
Because he didn't get the full-on surgery, if you remember.
Yeah,
he got,
that's
like,
right.
Bastardized
so
version.
I think Benoit got kind of pushed back. Like, they always, in their mind, it's funny that, you know, Benoit and Guerrero, they were guys who, and it's a testament to them, always stayed over despite the fact they weren't getting favorable booking from when they first came in. Now, Guerrero had to leave. He had substance abuse issues.
Right.
But he came back in 02 like a freaking machine. It's funny. He was more athletic and might have been, I guess, from a technical perspective, a better worker in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
Psychology-wise, he was better 02 to 05.
And persona.
Yeah.
Learning
he
how
knew
to,
how to, like, kind of carry himself mentally. The charisma. He knew what he was doing.
The charisma was more so there. And here's the thing, you know, in terms of looking at it too, you look at, and there's another parallel to the modern product where I've talked to you about the concept of a year ago Survivor Series. Dolph Ziggler and some of these other guys get microwaved. These guys essentially were microwaved at this point in time.
Guerrero was more microwaved than Benoit, because Benoit, if you remember, even at the Survivor Series, he did in a classic Survivor Series match make Lesnar tap.
Right, but here's the thing. How much memorable did he do between Royal Rumble and Survivor Series?
No, nothing. You're right. He was teaming with Rhino at WrestleMania. He did it. I talked about it in the 03 show. Yeah. People go back, listen to it if they haven't heard it, that it really sucked that we had to wait a full year for Benoit to get back on top, because he loses the match at Angle at Royal Rumble 03, and he kind of does just toil in obscurity for the most part of the year. But whether it was out of necessity, out of choice, the bottom line is, this show is the beginning of the actual rise of both Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit, maybe the two most unlikely WWE main eventers of all time, to the main event.
Well, in different ways.
I mean, it's more about Benoit. Like, Guerrero really kind of got micro, because Lesnar was having some issues over there on SmackDown. And, thank God they put it on Eddie before things got really bad. But as far as this Royal Rumble 04, it's obviously more about Benoit than Guerrero, but I think we should point out that Guerrero's put over very strong on the undercard, and that, you know, to me, their ascensions are very parallel. Although Benoit, because his was on Raw, and this is an issue we're going to bring up a lot during the rest of this part five, is sort of more front and center because it was the, quote, A brand.
Right.
We begin to see a little bit of it. 04 is the year where all of a sudden Raw becomes the A brand and SmackDown becomes the B brand, and that is not how this should have been designed.
That's right. And I'll tell you what, too. One more thing also, too, and not to buy into their modern revisionism, but of the thing, the longest lasting thing, I think, to come out of this WrestleMania season that started at the Royal Rumble, because I think they started to tease the feud here, Cena, Big Show. Cena gets his U.S. title win at MSG over Big Show at WrestleMania 20 and starts the ascent to the world title a year later. So, to an extent, that plays a role here, too.
Yeah, there were pieces in place. But look, all right, so let's talk about Benoit and Guerrero here.
Okay.
Or really just this pay-per-view, 2004 Royal Rumble.
What do you want? You want to start with the Rumble or the undercard?
I guess we can just talk about the undercard, just because the undercard I have in my notes, there's not much. We can fly through this, actually.
Well, let's do it.
I have undercard equals underwhelming is in my notes. We have the Dudleys, fourth year in a row in a tag team title match in the opener. Well, actually, in 03, it didn't open the show, but they were in a tag title match there. We didn't even mention that. It was kind of nearing the end of the line for them. They're facing Ric Flair and Batista here. Evolution, obviously, getting the mega push on Raw. And the Dudleys kind of got, you don't want to use the term buried, but they were beaten fairly convincingly here in a tables match. And you know what? I have no problem with it.
You and I watched.
Bubba wearing shorts was not a good idea.
That was weird, yeah. You and I watched a good chunk of this pay-per-view together, and both of us laughed about the post-match commentary. I mean, it was just the positioning. If you would have told me that was the Dudleys' last match, I'd have believed it.
Yeah, I mean, Flair's like, we just beat your ass in a tables match.
In Philly.
Yeah, he even said in Philly. Yeah,
yeah,
they just took it. The Dudleys got they got no heat back after
this. Right. I mean, it's a long way from Heat Wave 99 to a moment like that, let me tell you.
You have a Rey Mysterio, Jamie Noble cruiserweight match with the horrible Nydia is Blind storyline. This did not need to be on the show.
One of the things that was interesting to me in this match is, I don't know the ref's name, they had a mustachioed referee who looked a little bit like Obama advisor David Axelrod. Is that what he was doing in his pre-White House days?
I don't know. I didn't catch that. I'm going to have to go back and look at that. Okay. and a main reason that I don't think Ray v. Jamie Noble needed to be on the show, because they didn't get a lot of time. To be honest, all this undercard matches, except one, you can guess which one it is, didn't get much time. And Eddie versus Chavo. Let's go to Eddie.
Yeah.
Here, because he's a big part of what we're talking about. They had split up Los Guerreros, really, to be honest with you, until this pay-per-view and Eddie going over really strong, you never did get a hint that Eddie Guerrero was going to be a world champion, even you know, one of the two world champions. He goes, like, I know you have some issues that they could have got more
rushed,
legs out of this
feud.
It was
a rushed feud. It was a one-match feud. The match they had was the blow-off.
Yeah, well,
it's
part
weird.
Of it, part of it was, again...
Stretch it out, fellas.
I think it was microwave booking.
Yes.
I think that they hadn't made up their mind to go with Eddie until they had kind of gotten to Mania season here, and they're like, okay, well, we need to make Eddie champion. Because they had teased problems in Los Guerreros for a while through the fall. I remember watching Survivor Series 03. There was miscommunication. They finally, I think, split in another match with the Bashams. And by that point, it was December, and that was the Raw month pay-per-view. This is where kind of those brand-only pay-per-views sometimes could hurt you if you didn't do long-term planning.
Right.
And they had to get the title on Eddie in February, so they were basically pigeonholed. Well, we're going to do Eddie and Chavo in one match, and I think it did deserve more time. The video package was really good for this.
It was.
I had my note. It made it feel like a big deal, although it was just kind of a one-match feud, and the one guy who, the guy you'd expect and the guy who should have gone over, went over very clean and then really just, like, crushed Chavo at the end.
Let me ask you, and the post-match thing, yeah, it was shades of Hart and McMahon at WrestleMania 26. So almost overkill on the beatdown of Chavo and Chavo Classic. Here's a question for you, because Eddie was way over with this Philly crowd, unsurprisingly.
Yeah, Eddie was way over with a lot of crowds during this time period.
Okay, well, you talked about, you know, when they might have made up their minds. Do you suppose there was anything even going into the show of, like, let's see how over he is, and if he is, we'll do it? Do you suppose that it was still potentially
on the line, or had they made up their mind for sure?
The way
they got him into the title picture was on SmackDown after this.
Right.
We'll talk, you know, spoiler alert, Benoit wins the Rumble here.
Yeah.
And he jumped, he was a SmackDown guy.
Yeah.
And he jumps to Raw, and so that left his void on SmackDown.
Right.
And you know, I don't know when the decision was made, to be honest with you. I should probably look that up. I should have probably been prepared. But
I don't know that anybody has documented that.
That
is the
when
thing.
The decision, like,
in like, I wonder if this was part of the decision, how
you're
over
right.
he
like,
was here.
Like, I guess it's convenient to say, oh, they knew Eddie was going over here. You had to put him over strong. I'm not sure if that's true.
Well, they were
going to
put him over in this match regardless.
Oh, yeah, he
but
was going over.
But in terms of, like, how over is he going to be? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I like, and then, like, he met that threshold, and it's like, okay, we're going to pull a trigger on him. I wonder.
Yeah. But I thought this match was pretty good. I mean, I guess I can see your point that just a one-match feud is maybe that's not enough for Eddie Chavo. But, you know, at the same time, did we need to see Eddie beat Chavo multiple times? Did we even need to see Chavo beat Eddie?
Well,
I don't know about that.
At least Eddie never jobbed to Chavo. I will tell you this. That, and again, you're going to call this being me being Nelson nitpicker again. For a guy getting fed to Brock Lesnar the next month, he worked a decent amount of this match underneath. That might have enhanced his underdog, you know, persona.
Wait just
against,
a minute here.
He got offense in, but
wait
he also worked
just
underneath.
Just a minute here. I had to listen to you when we actually watched that match.
Yes, that's what
tell
I said
me,
to you.
Tell me, no, you were bitching the whole time about, you know,
the whole time?
You were bitching the whole time about, oh, you know, I just don't understand this chasm that people have between Eddie and Chavo.
But, no, and that's the thing, because I don't believe Chavo sucks like the rest of the world thinks. I think Chavo was above average, maybe decently above average.
He was not a star, though, like
Eddie
was.
And I don't think he was bereft of charisma just because he didn't have Eddie's charisma. But here's the thing, though. These two things do not contradict one another because Eddie's the guy he's pushing. You got to push Eddie to the moon. You have to, in this scenario, use Chavo to enhance Eddie. I get that. But that's my thing, is just like, maybe they didn't go far enough in having Chavo enhance Eddie. Even if I felt like Chavo deserved better over the course of the rest of his career, I'm talking winter of 04 and getting Eddie over like a mother. And let's face it, Eddie's victory the next month, spoiler alert, comes with a fair amount of interference from Goldberg anyways.
You know, again, though, it's funny. Eddie was so over that didn't really matter.
Right.
With the way Goldberg interfered.
And they retroactively kind of erased it afterwards, although they used parts of it to set up Lesnar-Goldberg at WrestleMania, which, by the way, also gets teased a couple of points in time on this show.
Yeah, but Brock Lesnar has some unfinished business to take care of this show.
Good segue, yes.
Everyone's favorite number one contender, Bob Holly. So, I believe, and I could be wrong, it's funny that I can remember, like, everything from, like, the 1990 show, mm-hmm. all the angles there, but I struggle sometimes with this era, and moving forward, it might even be worse. I could have sworn that they gave Holly this shot as a way to get him not to sue the company, because Lesnar did legitimately injure him in a match.
Yeah.
In what was it? It was 03?
Like, yeah, early 02.
It was late 02.
He slipped. Bob Holly, I listened to a shoot thing that he had done, and he said, look, you know, Brock was sick that day, probably shouldn't have even been working. It was a legitimate accident. He felt bad. He was like, there was no heat on that. Bob Holly was just like, hey, shiznit happens, whatever. So he makes it sound like he wasn't that angry about what happened,
okay,
and that this is the life we lead, the chances we take.
Okay, well, maybe
so I think that's wrong, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, anyway, this is interesting because this is the kind of thing that they probably wouldn't do today,
mm-hmm,
because Bob Holly's not a big star, but and he's not.
But this was the epitome of a dual brand, dual title thing. We can afford to do this because we have the Rumble match itself and because we have Triple H Michaels the other match.
But here's my thing with this match. Like, it's one of those things where the booking on paper seems right. Like, okay, you have this guy coming, he was injured, he comes back, and he wants to, like, that's very, like, it's a lot better than, okay, a star gets hurt, he comes back, and he, like, just doesn't even, like, because he's not a star, he doesn't dare approach Brock Lesnar,
right,
the champion, right? It's, I like the fact that he was hurt and he came back after him.
You have two alternatives. One is a SmackDown match on TV, or the other one, which I think you're going to turn thumbs down on, is he gets the December pay-per-view thing here. You wouldn't have put him on a sole.
They didn't have the December pay-per-view SmackDown.
How did they not? Wasn't it their turn?
That only became later. In 03.
Oh, that's
and
right.
I believe
that's
only
right.
03.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
they introduced like Taboo Tuesday in
04, right,
or something.
Yeah.
03, Raw had December.
You're right. Okay.
So they didn't have time.
Okay.
So it's fine. But what's funny is Bob Holly's Bob Holly, and this didn't get over. And it was short. It was pretty inoffensive. No one bought.
Tell you what, though. Wasn't
they tried with Holly. No,
yeah,
they tried. Because
yeah,
I had to look up. I'm like, how did they even try to make this seem dramatic or like
Lesnar sold for him? Lesnar stooged for him? I told
he
you when watching
away from
it,
him
he
on
ran
all
away
these
from
SmackDowns.
Yeah.
The crowd just didn't buy Bob Holly as a legit contender, and that hurt the match, and that's why nobody cares about
this. I said to you when we were watching it, I think the bigger reason it didn't get over was the size differential. I think even more so than Bob Holly being a career mid-carder prior to this.
Oh, I think that's the driving force.
You think it's the mid-carder rather than size?
Yeah, I think it's mid. Bob Holly is legitimately mid-card for life.
I think the size thing doomed it. I mean, he's a blown up cruiserweight essentially. You know, he's a puffed up cruiserweight.
Wow.
How he got that puffed up, I'll leave it to your
I don't know.
Judgment.
I mean, Benoit Guerrero got over and they used to be actual cruiserweights.
Yeah, Lesnar never ran from either one of those two though. You know what I mean? It's how
That's
they had
true.
It booked. So
maybe
I don't know.
Maybe it's kind of like the Steiner thing. The crowd just didn't, you're right. Okay.
Yeah, but you're right that they didn't get into it. The other thing is too, I mean, Lesnar's the only one that comes out of this with any heat because he beats him clean with the F5. So
as he should have.
I mean,
the notion that Bob Holly,
right?
The notion that someone should have even brought up the idea of Bob Holly going over here is preposterous.
Tell you what, if you're at all thinking about politics in the company or whatever, I'm not going to sit here and peddle any conspiracy theories. But I'll tell you this though, Triple H had to be pretty happy that was the competing world title match
on this
show
rather
than
the previous year. I mean, after what happened on the year before, you're right.
Well,
I mean,
and Triple H on this card with Michaels in the latest incarnation of their feud had a dance partner unlike the previous year and Scott Steiner things could work with because, again, there's a theory that's out there. I think it's on the pro wrestling only board that I've seen that I kind of agree with, which is Triple H, if you're looking at his historical rating and, you know, is he one of the all-time greats, whatever, Triple H, it was only ever a guy that could have a great match with a great dance partner. Scott Steiner was not that guy. That match was doomed to be at a certain ceiling.
You know,
you
he
Triple
should get
H
credit
with
Batista. Batista's the one notable exception.
Yes, yes. Batista's you're absolute. That's sort of like Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior. Like, how did those two guys make that match?
No, it's different.
No,
because that Triple H, or that Hogan Warrior thing is like, every time you watch it, it's worse.
Really? Maybe I need to watch it more.
Yeah,
okay.
It's like.
By the way, I'm talking about WrestleMania 6, not Halloween Havoc.
Yes,
just so
yes,
you know.
No.
Okay.
It's funny. Like it was really over. It drew a lot of heat.
Okay.
But it's kind of a lot of rest holds.
Well, you're right to call me on that. Triple H Batista is exactly. He carried a young Batista to some great performances there. I don't know how he was able to do that, but he did. But most of the time, how good's the match going to be with Triple H? you'll look at who's across the ring, and that will give you some kind of an idea. Here with Shawn Michaels, with whom he always had, I thought pretty good chemistry. I mean, I'm not
really
gonna say,
good. Really, well, it depends. They wrestled so many times.
You have a theory that I think is very interesting, and I agree with.
Okay, I'll espouse it now if you don't mind. So they work a last standing. They work a last man standing match. Your Triple H is the champion. He has beaten Goldberg the month before, and this was kind of a continuation of a feud that goes all the way back to 02 between Triple H and Michaels when Michaels returned. So there were five high profile, air quotes, Triple H Shawn Michaels matches between SummerSlam 02 and the summer of 04.
One-on-one matches?
Yes.
Okay.
You're right, because obviously WrestleMania, they're both in a three-way dance. It doesn't get that more high profile.
Yeah.
And Backlash. But no, when it's just Triple H versus Michaels, I counted five matches on big-time matches between those two that I focused on.
Okay.
Maybe there were others that I'm missing. I don't know. There was the first one back, Michaels return in SummerSlam 02. That match is awesome. As the big Michaels fan as I was growing up, the fact that that was... He came back and he looked really good. I was marking out for that one.
Mm-hmm.
They had the match that set this up, actually, which was on Raw in San Antonio, and they did a Dusty finish. Do you remember this?
Yes.
Michaels hit the Sweet Chin Music, falls back on him in dramatic fashion, but he falls back on him in a way that his shoulders were down, and Bischoff comes out and says, "Both your shoulders were down. You didn't win the title." It's a double pin, and that set up the last man standing.
Okay.
I like that Raw match a lot. That's a really good TV match. To be honest with you, other than Angle Benoit, the Rumble, it's probably the best WWF match of 2003.
What's the fifth one? Because I know we got this one, and then it climaxes at Hell in a Cell with kind of an awful match. What's the other one?
There was the Three Stages of Hell Armageddon 02.
Oh, okay.
That was when Triple H wins his belt back after losing it when they instituted the Raw back.
In the Elimination Chamber, okay, yeah.
That match, the Armageddon Three Stages of Hell,
it was
kind of a reprisal of the Triple H Austin Three Stages of Hell match from No Way Out 01, where I think they did straight wrestling, and then there was like a street fight, and there was a ladder. I can't remember the three, but it was like three different kinds of matches.
Wouldn't it be great if they did a blind draw for that, and one of them was an ROH pure wrestling match?
What if they did a coal miner's glove match?
Oh, mistake.
Like they did, yes. Hold on, let me look. I'm going to look here because I feel bad. I don't like to be wrong on things. So let me look at Armageddon 2002. I don't like how Armageddon movie came up, by the way. That's one of my least favorite movies ever. The only movie where I actively wanted the world to end.
Armageddon, the one Chris Christie would like to trigger, comma.
Armageddon in his house is when the fridge is empty. Okay, Three Stages of Hell. It was a street fight. Okay, they didn't even do a straight wrestling match. The first fall was a street fight.
Mm-hmm.
The second fall was steel cage. The third fall was ladder. Okay, this even makes my point even better.
Okay.
That's kind of ridiculous. This was last man standing.
Okay.
And then the bad blood was Hell in the Cell. I think those three, despite all the gimmickry involved, compared to the... Although it was non-sanctioned the first time they did SummerSlam... Those three weren't as good. And I compare it to, like, a double album in music. Like, most rock critics don't really like double albums. Even, like, the good ones, like the White Album or, like, Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness. Mm-hmm. They have very, like, there's a lot of stuff in there where it's, like, skippable. You're like, oh, this is bad. Like, you know, there's, like, you go through double album, skip.
Right.
And I feel that they tried, there were times... This wasn't as egregious as an example as that Armageddon 02 or the Hell in the Cell one, certainly, where they were given too much time and they tried too hard to do a Broadway, and like a double album in music, it just became kind of bloated. Like, you could have done the same in 20 minutes as you did in 30. And the Raw match that set this up in San Antonio and that first one that they did at SummerSlam, those were tighter matches and the better matches. Like, how long did they give this? This Last Man Standing match went on for a while, I feel.
It was a longer match. And there were some things that they did to try to camouflage the length of it. Like, they staggered. Both of these guys end up doing, I'd say at minimum, especially Michaels, 0.9 Muta blade jobs.
Again, like it's like they're trying to do like but all it was, this stuff in a match.
But it was staggered. You remember like how much earlier Shawn bled than Triple H?
So this went 20. This actually only went 22:46. But when you have the post match stuff and you have like again, I would rank this probably of the five third best.
Right.
But it's like a. Is this like a 4-star match? I don't think it was.
I don't think it was.
I thought it was like 3.5, and I would have the SummerSlam one. I'd give like 4.75 to. I love it, and then the Raw one I'd give like so. They did a straight Raw match in San Antonio, Michael's hometown, that I thought was better. That had very few gimmicks, if any at all, really none. That was better than this.
Part of me wants to give them credit for being inventive because, like, I've never heard of a non-finish to a last man standing
match.
Yeah,
and that hurt this, too, because, like, Michaels does a sweet chin music and neither can answer the bell.
Well, yeah, and as I said to you, politically speaking, can you imagine a world where Triple H gives the pedigree and can't rise to his feet before 10? I can't imagine
that.
I can
imagine where the other guy doesn't rise before 10.
Well, yeah, we could definitely imagine that, but it's funny because I told you when we were watching it, I forgot what the finish was. I was thinking Triple H went over, and he'd beaten him with chairs. There were a lot of chair shots to the head. There was a lot of wellness-unfriendly stuff here, and then he gives him a pedigree, and I thought he was going to win. I was like, oh, classic Triple H. The pedigree is more powerful than the chairs. And then I had misremembered the finish. But anyways.
Like Dick Togo and Michinoku Pro 96. They did all those high spots, and he won with the fat-ass senton.
Yeah, exactly. So Triple H is stretchered out of there. Michaels gets off the stretcher, walks up the ramp as JR is saying that many people probably feel Shawn Michaels should be champion. Interestingly enough, you and I wondered about this, and we never got an answer on the broadcast. Out comes Batista and Flair, the tag team champions. They'd been partying earlier in the night. Flair gives
after
the aside
their
to
match, yeah.
Benoit about, you know, you're always a second place guy. But anyways, I'm saying to you, why was Flair, were they, in an era where Flair was wrestling a little more as tag team champion with Batista, were they minimizing him as manager for Triple H? We never really got
the answer to why he wasn't there. Yeah, I don't know.
Was it a thing of, like, that it would have been a little too much for him to get, you know, decked out in the suit and whatever after the match and, you know what
maybe,
I mean?
Maybe, I don't know, to be honest with you, when he did confront Benoit for that promo earlier in the show.
Because he was looking crappy.
I think he was drunk.
He was drunk. He looked like he was bleeding.
I don't know. So maybe
he was a mess.
I don't know. So
it just seemed jarring that Flair wasn't
like,
there with him.
It was kind of funny. Like, maybe this one wasn't the best example to do with the double album thing, but I thought that it's funny that when they went heavy on the gimmick match, this one and the Hell in a Cell and the Three Stages of Hell, they weren't as good as when they did less gimmickry in it.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting.
Less is more. That's a lesson Triple H never learned in laying out his matches.
We have the Royal Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
I love this Royal Rumble. I think it is the second best Royal Rumble ever. I have it at 4.25 stars. It is one of only two that will get more than 4 stars.
I give it 3. You and I part company on
3?
This one. Yeah.
Wow.
I have it a shade below the previous year. Yeah.
Wow. I thought this was better than all of the Attitude Era
ones. I take it back.
Ones.
I have it a half star below the previous year. Yeah.
I think this is better than all the Attitude Era ones and certainly the year before. Because this one is good at the end.
Here and here's the funny thing, too. I can tell you from looking ahead here. I have a big spike up for 05 and an absolute plummet for 06.
Okay. I know that for me in this era, 06 is definitely the sore thumb. And this is the highlight. The other ones I kind of will all start having in the more average category. Mm-hmm. But obviously, a lot of this rating and part of me just kind of thinks I should re-rate it, but I just don't. I just watched it again, and I was like, no, I kind of agree with my original rating. But a lot of that original, when I first watched it, I loved this Rumble. I immediately got into it, was Benoit winning.
Right.
And obviously, the rosiness of, oh my God, he's actually going to main event WrestleMania is not so rosy anymore.
By the way, there's
no way to escape that it's not very fun to watch Chris Benoit anymore. And at the time, that was the whole thing of this show. The whole allure was the show is holy Benoit is going to, you know,
that's
right, be in the main event. But even that, I thought there was a lot to sink your teeth into here.
I watched it like in a detached way in 03, kind of the same thing here. By the way, quick note, I had forgotten to mention this from the previous thing here. Triple H, Michaels, whatever else we might say about the screwy finish, I just don't want to mention this here. You got to go back to 95, 96, but at least they had a plan going forward for Triple H and Michaels. You can't say that for Bret Taker and Bret Diesel, who never should have, they never should have wrestled each other. And especially Bret and Diesel, coming off of Diesel's win.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Those just kind of devalued the champions in those situations.
Right, right.
You're right. They booked the match with the idea of a non-finish not going anywhere.
Right,
with it.
Right.
Although eventually in 95, I'll say this, mm-hmm. Bret does eventually beat Diesel later. 95.
That's true. That wasn't envisioned at that point, certainly.
No, it wasn't.
This one here, you know, we've got this screwy kind of Heyman and Bischoff thing that starts it, which is just kind of goofy.
The Rumble.
Bischoff interrupts Howard Finkel's, you know, traditional kind of
open. I'm back and better than ever.
I'm telling you, man, that's his audio polka dots. That was a rib from Vince giving him such a crappy kind of a finish or music to it there. That was a rib.
It was kind of a shitty song.
And
least it stood out more than whatever that generic music Heyman got. I didn't remember Paul Heyman's music.
That's a designation, by the way, that I'm deliberately hoping takes off among our English friends that do wrestling podcasting. Audio polka dots. Go ahead and use it, fellas.
So, you know, I don't want to talk about that with Sheriff Austin stunning the two GMs. That was kind of pointless.
Well, here's the thing, too. The ring had, it was spotted with blood from Triple H and Michaels from their blade jobs. You got all this beer in there afterwards. It's like, what was the footing like? I always wonder what it's like to follow something like that. And who wanted to be writhing on the mat during the match with all that blood out there?
It seemed like they cleaned it up, though, during the match.
Maybe. Who knows?
It didn't seem like it was still out there.
Did you see guys with bleach bottles? Because I didn't see anything like that.
I didn't, but when I... Okay. As I'm thinking about the Rumble match, it didn't seem like all that blood was on there anymore.
I didn't notice it, but that doesn't mean it wasn't there.
Okay. Well, they did something.
By the way, keys to victory from Taz beforehand. You popped for that. It was like a football kind of a thing.
I enjoyed it. If Phil Simms would have done it, I would have hated it, but Taz greater than Phil Simms. So the match starts with Benoit and Orton.
Yeah.
And they really carry the first two-thirds of this thing. The one and two... staying in a long time got to be a crutch as we'll go through the Rumbles.
A real trope, as they say.
Yeah. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Here it clearly worked. Like 95, when they first did it with Michaels and Bulldog, and that's a bastardized Rumble anyway with the minute intervals, didn't work there, in my opinion.
By the way, you know what also...
Here it worked a lot. Like, it worked really... Like, you, both guys were really over. Orton was set to have himself, well, at least for the first... two-thirds, a great 2004, and it wasn't like, when I compare this to like 92, the best Rumble of them all, and I think there's a huge gap between 92 and all of them, like, Benoit was not in the same position as Flair in that, like, he was the focal point of the match the whole way through.
Right.
He actually really wasn't the focal point until the end.
He was in the background.
And, like, now it's funny, like, a lot of people will criticize the 92 Rumble. I've seen this, oh, so obvious, Flair's going to go over.
What?
Well, that's only when you watch it.
Oh, God, that's retrospect, man.
Yes. Like, at the time, you didn't, like, we referenced this, and, you know, it's funny, I'll actually remember this, and you don't. From our mini episode, we hammered that when it's like, the idea of a heel winning in that fashion in WWF had never happened before.
I want to see whoever said that, eat a Drano pie. That's an awful, awful take for anybody to have.
Okay. I don't know if you responded that way when I mentioned it in 92. Maybe you did. It's funny, I can't remember anything. We can't remember these things. Okay.
Yeah.
But anyway.
It's not like there's a record of what we said.
Yes. So I really thought it helped that you didn't know who would win this one.
Right.
That's always good for the... Like, there should always be a couple guys. I mean, because it can't be the point where there's no star power.
Right.
But... there should be a couple guys. And this one, really, when you get to the end, you didn't know. You had a lot of big names in there. You had some things going on. Here's some notes I have, just from the thing as a whole. You have the Kane-Taker storyline in here, which is kind of kept pretty brief, where Kane had buried Undertaker a few months earlier, and the gong sounded, threw Kane off. He gets dumped.
Next year, they're teaming up. Typical Brothers of Destruction stuff.
Yes, yeah. That storyline never exists. You have the made-over slightly Bradshaw coming out early in this.
Yeah.
You know, kind of, he had the look of JBL, but he was still in the acolytes. Farouk was not in this match, though. Bradshaw only
was. That's right. He was already getting phased out.
To me, other than Benoit winning at the time, the highlight of this, though, was the return of Mick Foley.
Yeah.
What a unbelievable moment that was.
Yeah.
I really popped for that. You know, it's funny. I forgot they had teased it before the Rumble because I've watched this Rumble a lot of times, but I haven't watched the undercard. And so they teased beforehand. They said, oh, well, here's this seat here. Mick Foley was invited. And JR's like, well, I guess he's a coward because they had done the whole thing where he'd refused to face Orton on Raw and he walked away.
Right.
Here he comes back, confronts Orton, beats the holy hell out of him, sets up that feud that goes through Mania into Backlash where, you know, Orton kind of takes the next step. I thought that was tremendously done.
That was very well done.
There are very few, this is like 03, there's very few what, for lack of a better term, I'll call bums in here. There's not like those guys that, those cringeworthy guys where it's like, all right, just toss this guy already. You know, Matt Morgan had potential.
Right.
So I think it's maybe unfair to group him in here. Rene Dupree was kind of not very good.
Rico, only because they underutilized
Yeah,
him.
Rico I thought was, yeah, he was good. The Cat, I think we can agree, is a dog. The Cat is a dog. He was hideous.
Like, I don't mind.
I never understood that signing.
Interludes from time to time. I mean, that was legitimately pretty funny, you know. And the guy in the afro that was out there with him. I mean, I laughed.
I think he came out because everyone was knocked out still,
right?
Or something, and he came out, danced, gets tossed.
There was something I laughed at that I don't think was supposed to draw a laugh, but watching it in 2015, things you couldn't say these days. Taz, quote: Mark Henry's got a head like a farm animal. End quote. Yes, I heard that. So, oh, by the way, you were talking about things that sometimes work and don't work. Something that always fails at the Royal Rumble, I love Tajiri, but doing the tarantula spot,
yes,
that always gets you eliminated.
Yeah, that got him eliminated in 03. Something that does work, though,
what?
And you started to see this as a success of the brand extension,
uh-huh,
was Raw and SmackDown guys facing off.
Yeah.
Like, this was kind of like the only match where you'd see some of these guys ever interact during the year. That was the nod to the brand extension.
This was the high point probably every year of the brand extension because they'd kept them separate, and they did as effective a job as they could have done under the circumstances of playing that up on the show. Now, one of my issues with this thing here is the overall star power of the match here. It was you kind of, you go like that when they said during the match that this is the first one we've ever had that didn't have a previous winner in it. And there were no previous Rumble winners.
I don't know if the star power was necessarily down from 03 for this. Again, it doesn't have...
Here's the thing.
It doesn't have, because Austin and Rock are gone,
yeah,
it does not have the tippy top star power. But then again...
Triple H, Michaels were on the undercard.
Yeah, but then again...
So was Lesnar. Taker was doing a sabbatical. So, I mean, that's one of the reasons
you have Bill Goldberg. Now, he wasn't used very well.
No,
I thought the psychology was bizarre, how he won 30. And like, for a babyface to win the 30th spot and then fail kind of quickly, I know they did the thing with Lesnar interfering and that set up their Mania match.
Right.
I think that's bad psychology to have a face come in that late and fail, especially if he's a star like that. He should have been in there earlier. And
right.
I think it would have drawn more heat.
Well, something during the...
But you had Kurt Angle in this? Chris Jericho?
Yeah, okay. But they'd already... Jericho way more
Orton?
Than Angle had been devalued.
Orton
wasn't much yet.
Hey, he was the Intercontinental
Orton,
Champion.
It took... Mid-card, dude. It took the Foley program to elevate him. But it's a thing, too. Something that... Not only was hard to believe watching
depth,
it, but...
though. I'm going to say the same thing I said
right.
about to counter you with 03. There's better depth here than there was in 98 or 99. You may not have had Austin or Rock, but you had better depth.
Not necessarily guys I liked as much, and that factors in. I liked more of the guys in 99.
I don't know why you liked some of those guys. Some of those guys were
just
awful
like,
in retrospect.
It's like comfort food, because 99 was a great era. It's just sort of a comfort food kind of a thing. But I'll tell you this. There was a spot earlier in the match that you wouldn't have believed it, that by that summer... The champions on both brands, you talked about Triple H and Lesnar fatigue, that it would be Benoit for a brief interval with JBL, and you see Benoit and Bradshaw wrapping it up here at one point. You commented on this also, too. I think this is pointless, but you noticed it. The thing of, like, Bradshaw comes out there, ultimate ass kicker, whatever, and then he's out in, like, 2 minutes or so.
He's even less than 2 minutes. Why do they do that? They will do that. They never did it in the early Rumbles, I feel.
Just as a shot
But
kind
they
of a
did
thing?
It. It was kind of like the crack booking, where they needed to keep your attention. So a guy comes in, he gets over, and then he gets tossed. I don't understand, like... It's one of those things
where... Yeah, but that undermines the getting over. You know
what
I mean?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Like, in the early Rumbles, if a guy wasn't going to be in very long...
Right.
They would just sort of like, oh, all right, here's this guy, and he didn't do much. You know, like, they didn't
that's
do...
Right.
They, you know, like, when Nikolai Volkov came in the 92 Rumble, I mean, they kind of... This is an egregious example because they kind of buried him, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, he just came in and just, I don't know, started fighting with random people and gets tossed in a minute.
Right.
They didn't draw any attention to him. You know, it's kind of like, all right, this is one of the shitty guys. But it's just weird that they would do that with a guy like Bradshaw, where he comes in, clotheslines from he gives the clothesline from hell to five people and then gets tossed.
Right.
That's just weird.
And
from a psychology perspective.
I thought so, yeah. I agree with you on that. A couple other notes that I had here. You talk about when Goldberg came in, comes in, and he's dominating, you know, until he gets out of there. But it gives the jackhammer to Big Show, and JR is, like, all surprised. And I'm like, dude, weren't you watching Road Wild 98? He's done this before.
Well,
so
I don't think that matters.
Really? Okay.
No.
Well, the other thing, too, is that, you know, in watching this, you know, I kind of laughed to you about the backstage thing before the match here. But as over as John Cena still was doing the Dr. Thugonomics thing.
Oh, that's right.
I mean,
in Philly?
In Philly. We were laughing about that. John Cena cheered like he was the Pope in Philly. I mean, it was, you know, imagine that happening today. But again, Dr. Thugonomics versus what he would subsequently become. RVD interrupts it. You know, John Cena... at that point, you know, even making a weed joke about RVD.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
there was that earlier promo I enjoyed.
Well, yeah,
that.
So, I mean, and he was over when he came out, too. So, but, again, they were already starting. Didn't they tease when he was in there about him and Big Show? Wasn't that the start of what was going to be their program for Mania?
Yeah, I think Big Show tossed him.
Yeah. So that kind of started to set that up. And you talk about something with long-term ramifications for the company. The start of the Cena push to the moon, which took a year. Was kind of that, but, you know, coming out of this match.
I guess Cena was, I know, I guess you couldn't buy Cena, but, like, to me, like, there was just a lot of talent in this, and, again, kind of like WrestleMania, for me,
right.
When I go back into to 2004 and think about it, I guess it's pretty obvious, certainly when it comes down to Benoit and Big Show, who's going over, but you just didn't believe Chris Benoit was ever going to go over
right.
until he went over.
Well, and the other thing,
that,
too.
That helped us
when
so
you,
much.
When you talk about star power in this match, and you're citing guys like Orton, who blew up, or at least blew up, relatively speaking, after this, like, to me, like, you know, like, what Strat-O-Matic baseball is, right? Like, you know, you get the cards for, like, a year, and you play it out. Like, that's how I am about this. I'm like... That's Randy Orton 04. I don't give a crap what he did in 09 or 07.
See,
or
I liked Randy Orton in 04 more than I liked him in 09.
I liked him in 09 better, to be honest with you.
People will talk about that because obviously when he 09, he's mm-hmm. a centerpiece of promotion. People were slobbering over him. I'm like, dude, I liked him way better in 04.
That's kind of a hipster kind of thing, isn't it? You know, like, you think Randy Orton's good now.
No, see, I think. First of all, I think anyone who thought anything was good and many things were good in 2010 is kind of hipster, but I don't know if it's a hipster point of view.
Okay.
I just thought he was booked better.
Okay.
I don't think he was booked as well in 09. He might have been a better all-around performer because he had more years under his belt, but I don't think he was booked as strong.
I take it you mean up to SummerSlam. You can't possibly mean past SummerSlam 04.
But that's a different podcast for a different day.
For a different day.
Yes.
All right. Because that's when the title's coming off of Benoit, and we're getting ahead of ourselves here because we're just on this show starting his march to the main event.
And it's quick. I mean, again, like, you know, Benoit's kind of back where he always was. Guerrero's back where he always was by 05. But, again, you know, and it's funny. I think 03 and 04, there's a lot. Like, they're kind of tied together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not that much. I don't think there's that much change between the two because, you know, Lesnar's a common theme.
Right.
Triple H is champion early. 05 to 07, we're going to start to see, as you alluded to at the beginning, the dual ascension of Cena and Batista. Cena, as we go through this part five, becomes the focal point of the promotion.
Mm-hmm.
We see some newer guys come into the fold. And, you know, I look forward to talking about it. I think overall the pay-per-views aren't as strong. You know, this pay-per-view... Well, I shouldn't say that. I like the 07 one. We'll probably debate that. But
that's my next one to watch,
okay.
So I have no idea
okay.
yet.
With
you probably liked it more than me.
With 04, I don't think this was a great pay-per-view, but I love the Rumble. I don't. I think
well,
as a pay-per-view, it wasn't as strong as the previous years, but I liked the Rumble better than every Rumble besides 92.
And I'll freely admit, and the way I've characterized it is, like, when I'm watching Benoit matches, like I said, I have a hard time being objective on that. I'm trying not to detract points from it, but I can't add points to it. I'll freely admit to you, if Benoit never did what he did subsequently, I might give this match 4 stars because I could invest in it. But watching it from the cold perspective I have of, let me just get through the Benoit stuff without being upset, that's how I'm at 3 stars, because there weren't enough other things here. I didn't think there was enough star power in here. What is interesting, I have this in my notes, is that I don't remember too many instances of this in company history, although ironically, I remember this from Benoit's short-lived faux WCW title victory at Sold Out 2000. The acknowledgement of, you know, breaking through the glass ceiling, they didn't say glass ceiling, but I mean, you know, the announcer's putting it over, and without saying the word mid-carder, but I mean, this man has risen up from the mid-card to break through. This is just like, you didn't hear that a lot.
Because they don't do it a lot.
But that's, they don't do it a lot, but I mean, it was central to Benoit's story. I suppose there was no way to do this without doing it that way, but Benoit and Taz did acknowledge that. By the way, too, the other, I'm sorry, JR and Taz, I have this also written down here, too, that JR and Taz, when you go back to some of the ad hoc combos of the 90s, like Vince DiBiase, Vince Hennig, way better than that.
Oh, and
I'm not a big Taz as an announcer
we
guy.
We should also mention that,
and this is
thank
after
God
JR,
Jerry Lawler wasn't doing this.
Oh, yeah, this was after JR's peak. I'm not a big fan of Taz as an announcer, but my God, it's so much better than the 90s combos that came after Brain and Gorilla. So, you know, I say 3 stars. You said what, 4.5?
Four and a quarter.
4 and a quarter, okay.
Second best Rumble ever. This joins 92 as the only Rumbles I will give more than 4 stars to.
Okay.
I will give two. There are 2 Rumbles to come that I will give 4 stars exactly to.
Okay. I'm guessing 14 and 15 weren't the ones.
They're not. They are on the lower end.
I don't blame you for that. We'll get into that. Although, as we're talking undercards, I can't believe I'm looking forward to basically the end of this thing in that way, but I'm very much looking forward to talking about the 2015 Triple Threat match with you and seeing how you're going to rate that.
That match will threaten for the number 5 spot.
Okay.
In my list of lists here.
That will
threaten for the 5 spot. That will threaten this. It's hard because you know what the other contender is
what?
For me? The Royal Rumble 2004. Those are like
match itself?
Yeah. This one that we just talked about.
Oh.
And that's really hard to compare those two matches because they're so different.
They are apples and oranges in a big, big way. But I mean, to me, I take Brock Cena Rollins over that, but that's pretty easily. But that's because I had this one rated where I had it rated. So that's the fun of doing this thing is seeing where we come out, providing a little bit of history and background and our perspectives on it. Next, we get to 2005, which for me is an upswing from here. For you, I'm guessing it couldn't be because you said this is your second highest one ever. So.
As far as the Rumble goes, it's not as good.
Okay.
As far as the pay-per-view goes,
mm-hmm.
better. And again, I mentioned that I like 04 and I like 05 Mania season. I think it's pretty close. I think they wind up being fairly comparable.
Okay. I definitely like the Rumble match of 05 better than this one, and better than I'm sure you have it rated, but we'll get into that next time.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.